Hello, this is Nicole Gelinas of the Manhattan Institute and Public Sector, Inc. Today I'm here with Josh Barrow. Josh is the Walter Wriston Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and he is the editor of Public Sector, Inc., a website that can be found at publicsectorinc.org. Good afternoon, Josh.
Good afternoon, Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Josh has written a new piece for Public Sector, Inc., addressing and explaining a potential problem in the idea of switching public sector employees in the state and level government sectors to defined contribution-style pension plans, that is, 401k-style pension plans, without making another key reform at the same time. Josh, why don't you talk a little bit about your article called Pension Reform for Public Workers Outside Social Security. What is the problem here, first of all, in do employees of the 15 states that you talk about, if we switch them, or the governors and state legislatures switch them to defined contribution plans, can they rely on Social Security like all virtually all employees in the private sector rely on Social Security as a safety net if their other retirement plans don't work out as they expected?
Well, the short answer is no, they can't rely on Social Security, and these form a special case that needs to be addressed when we talk about what pension reform should entail at the state and local level. In general, I've been writing, and a lot of the other writers at Public Sector, Inc. have been writing about how we should move public employees to 401k-style defined contribution plans, and this achieves a couple of things. Defined benefit plans have a tendency to incur excessive costs for taxpayers because it's difficult for both taxpayers and lawmakers to figure out what the plans really cost. They also impose significant market risk on state and local governments, and therefore on taxpayers, that they are not really in a very good position to bear because state and local governments can't work their way through recessions when pension plans will tend to lose value by running deficits. They have to balance their budgets, and that essentially makes budget crises more acute. So in general, the solution to that is to do what's been done in the private sector and move away from defined benefit pensions to defined contribution plans. One wrinkle in a minority of states is in 15 states, you have many or most public employees not participating in Social Security. They don't pay Social Security tax, and they don't get to collect benefits when they retire. Currently, it's not really an issue for them that they don't get Social Security because they have their defined benefit pension to rely on in retirement. Now, when we talk about the appropriateness of 401k in the private sector and in most state and local governments, one thing we point out is that those workers have Social Security to rely on as an anti-poverty safety net. It's a component of their retirement income that is defined benefit in structure. And Social Security is theoretically supposed to be designed to provide for an appropriate above poverty level subsistence level of living that's not a luxurious retirement, but it protects people from being destitute in retirement. These workers who aren't in Social Security, if we take away their defined benefit pensions entirely and just give them a 401k, will be left without any social insurance and could theoretically end up destitute in retirement. So that doesn't mean that these states shouldn't do pension reform. They absolutely should, but they need to do it in a way that ensures that those workers receive some sort of safety net. One way to do that would be for them to opt into Social Security, like most states do, or another way would be to go to a significantly reduced and reformed defined benefit that looks a lot like Social Security but is run by the state government, and then a defined contribution pension on top of that to provide a higher level of benefits above what is considered an anti-poverty measure.
And we can go into the details of your proposed reforms in a moment. First, why is it that these public employees have not pressured Washington and their own governments into pushing them into Social Security? You would think, or many people might think, that they wouldn't want to be taking this risk. Aren't they worried that their public sector pensions will go away and they will have no money for retirement?
Well, so in most states, public workers are in Social Security. The way the law works, governments have never been required to participate. They can opt into Social Security, but once you opt in, you can't leave. And so most governments that entered decades ago at a time when Social Security looked like a better deal than it probably does today. But those states that didn't, the reason that workers and taxpayers don't really want to go into Social Security is you then have to start paying payroll tax, 12.4% of salary, half paid by the employer and half paid by the employee. And that's a lot of money. Now, of course, you get benefits in exchange for that, but the trade doesn't look so great. The value of Social Security benefits depends a lot on your circumstance. Social Security is a better deal for you if you have a low income. It's also a better deal for you if you work and your spouse does not work, or vice versa. But if you look at a sort of median case, which is somebody who was born in 1973 and so is nearly 40 years old, married couple, dual earner, earning on the average wage index, so at, you know, at any given age in their life, they're earning the average age for people at that age. Those people are earning a real return on their Social Security tax paid by them and their employer of about 2.3% a year. And that's not a very appealing return when you compare it to the 8% that states think they're getting on pensions. And of course, we've been critical of that 8% number. But even if you adjust it down to a market value number like 5 or 6 and compare it to a nominal version of that 2.3 number, which would be something like 4.3. So, you know, a 4.3 nominal return on Social Security versus a conservative 5 to 6% return on a well-structured defined benefit plan, Social Security looks like a pretty bad deal. So I think states are acting rationally by staying out of Social Security if they're not in it. So when you go, when I've talked to lawmakers in places like California or Maine or other states that aren't in Social Security, and you say to them, well, as part of your reform, you should opt into Social Security, they sort of recoil and they say, well, we don't want to start having to pay payroll tax and our employees don't want to start having to pay it. We can come up with a more cost-effective system on our own. And there's some truth in that. They just need to be careful about how they structure it. But I think that it's not going to be very workable to just go to states and say, well, you know, go ahead and start agreeing to participate in Social Security. They understand it's not a great deal for them.
Right. Of course, not a great deal for them, but not a great deal for federal taxpayers if two decades down the line they're bailing out people, if you will, who did not pay into the system for decades, funding people before them. Now, you talked about these two ways in which states can create much more limited defined benefit programs so that they can give their own workers a safety net outside of Social Security as they ask these workers to take on more risk in the rest of their pensions. What's the first important element in making sure that this is a safety net program in not just having two pensions, one defined benefit and one 401k style pension?
Right. So I think there are a couple of things that a state that doesn't participate in Social Security should look at when reforming its pension benefit. They should be providing some sort of defined benefit that is an anti-poverty measure. And first, they should make sure that it really is an anti-poverty measure, which in my view means it should be a benefit that roughly approximates Social Security. Social Security will, for the typical baby boomer retiree, replace about 31% of pre-retirement income. And they can start collecting a full benefit at age 66. Whereas the typical pension in a state that doesn't participate in Social Security tends to be relatively generous, which isn't surprising since it's not on top of Social Security. It's a substitute for it. In most cases, it's more than a 50% replacement. In the most generous state, Colorado, it's nearly a 90% replacement. So the defined benefit portion should be smaller than those are today and should be subject to a later minimum retirement age. So basically, it's a benefit designed to prevent people from being destitute in poverty in retirement, not a benefit designed to allow people to retire at 58. That they will have to rely on an additional defined contribution benefit where they'll have some flexibility to decide how much to save. The other aspect of a reform, once you've figured out the right scope of the defined benefit, is to make sure that there isn't creep in that. One of the big risks that states face when providing defined benefits is that there's a political tendency to give out sweetened benefits and often to promise those benefits without actually funding them in advance. So these states should put in their constitutions, as one of them, Maine, already has, a rule that says you can't give out retroactively sweetened pension benefits unless you fund them up front. That prevents legislators from doing effective backdoor borrowing and helps make sure that when you have that limited defined benefit, it really stays a limited benefit over time.
Mm-hmm. That makes a good deal of sense. And finally, why shouldn't Congress simply force these states and localities to put their employees into Social Security, at least new employees? This seems a way to actually push them into doing pension reform, as they would have less money to contribute to defined benefit pensions. They'd be contributing that to Social Security. Is that a good idea, or should we leave this up to the states?
Yeah, I think that is a good idea. I mean, first of all, it would obviously make this pension reform question a lot simpler. The states would say, well, we don't want to go into Social Security, and you'd say, too bad, you have to go into Social Security. Also, the low rates of return in Social Security aren't a loss. What they are is a reflection of the fact that payroll tax partly goes to finance Social Security benefits and partly is diverted to pay for other operations of the federal government. So when we allow states like Maine to opt out of Social Security, that's a bonus for Maine workers and it's a bonus for Maine taxpayers, but it's a cost to taxpayers in the other 49 states who therefore have to deal with a larger federal budget gap or have to pay other higher taxes to make up for taxes not being collected. If you had all the public workers who are currently exempt start paying payroll taxes, the federal government would collect about an additional $30 billion a year. So it's a really substantial amount of money, and I think that Congress probably should force those states to participate. But this has been a longstanding feature. We've had Social Security for about 80 years now, and local governments and state governments have never been obligated to participate. So I don't think it's terribly likely Congress would make that change, but certainly I think that they should. I think Social Security should be a universal program, including everybody, including state and local government workers around the country.
Right. Thank you, Josh. And again, if you would like to learn more about this topic, please go to publicsectorinc.org and you can read the article written by Josh Barrow, Pension Reform for Public Workers Outside Social Security. Thank you.